40 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. A grand jury in Manhattan indicts former President Donald Trump, and he calls it political persecution. Prosecutors in New York have been investigating the alleged falsifying of records tied to hush money payments during Trump's 2016 White House run to adult film actress Stormy Daniels and a second woman who alleged an affair with Trump, according to CBS sources familiar with the matter. CBS's Robert Costa says of Trump's lawyers,
they're going to fight this at every turn. First, move to dismiss the indictment, and then ultimately, if it goes to trial, to question the credibility of the key witness Michael Cohen.
More from CBS's Major Garrett.
Those in the Trump inner circle, much more concerned about the actions of the special counsel here in Washington, D.C., and the series of setbacks dealt to Trump and his attorneys in both the questions about his handling or mishandling of classified documents and his actions leading up to and on January 6th. Those cases are also moving forward, and the series of losses by the Trump legal team there concern them much more deeply than what has just happened today in Manhattan.
Sources familiar with the matter tell CBS News that Trump is expected to be arraigned on Tuesday. Gwyneth Paltrow has won her court battle over a 2016 ski collision. A verdict was reached in Park City, Utah today.
Was Gwyneth Paltrow at fault? No.
A jury dismissed the complaint of a retired optometrist who sued Paltrow over injuries he said he suffered when the two crashed at Deer Valley Ski Resort. At the Tennessee State Capitol today, thousands of students and parents from Nashville's public schools held a rally demanding tougher gun reforms in the wake of the deadly school shooting at Covenant School on Monday. Federal health officials are seeing an uptick in the number of kids landing in the emergency room with gunshot wounds. WSB's Sabrina Cupid reports.
The average weekly emergency room visits for gunshot wounds increased 37% in 2020 compared to 2019, the largest increase among children 0 to 14 years old. CDC's Marissa Zwald says the pandemic played a part.
And so some of that, you know, is the disruptions to daily routines in school through social isolation and also increased time at home, which can increase access to firearms in a home.
She says firearm injuries are preventable and a comprehensive approach to preventing and responding to firearm injuries is needed. Sabrina Cupid for CBS News Atlanta.
State Department spokesperson Vedant Patel says of a couple of Americans in Haiti,
I can confirm the kidnapping of two U.S. citizens in Haiti. We are in regular contact with Haitian authorities and will continue to work with them.
Other details still unclear. Russia arrests Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich, accusing him of trying to obtain classified information. The newspaper denies the accusation. The White House is monitoring the situation. On Wall Street, the Dow closed up 141 points. This is CBS News.
Hire with minimal effort and maximum success with Indeed. Their powerful hiring platform makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in one.
News brought to you by Gingras Thompson & Watts, your personal injury attorneys dedicated to helping you get the justice you deserve. GTWLawyers.com. They're all in to win.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. People who want to sue the Wisconsin legislature would have other options besides Dane County Court. That's under a Republican bill that would have the state Supreme Court randomly choose which county each case would be heard in. That's after Republicans complained for years they get unfair treatment from judges in Madison. Ozaukee County is the healthiest county in Wisconsin. Menominee County is the least healthy. At least that's according to new data from the University of Wisconsin Population Health Institute. Rankings are based on several factors, including physical health, mental health, and education. In sports, it's baseball's opening day. The Brewers play the Cubs in Chicago this afternoon. Tonight, the Bucks host Boston in a game with big playoff seeding implications. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Civic Media promised you something big to celebrate our new and still growing network of radio stations. When we announced the one-day $1 million advertising giveaway for Wisconsin businesses, you responded.
Just wanted to echo your sentiments about the advertising. That's really a cool deal and really remarkable.
$1 million of free advertising. Now, if you missed this chance to work with our team, go to civicmedia.us and click on the sponsorship tab. One of our local sales pros will get right back to you. Civicmedia.us and sponsorship. We'll be right back.
Monday morning at 8, don't miss Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring legendary Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Football, life, and fun.
Earl, you've been driving a Yugo. They just gave you a brand new Ferrari with turbo boost. So enjoy it, brother.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Monday morning at 8 on The Shaw. 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK.
Max Inc. Radio with Dennis Graham from Rockonson.
Appreciate all the support of Mad Radio 92.7. And by the way, a tip of the hat to Civic Media. That was a great article on the Cap Times by Paul Fanlon. You guys got a great model that you're growing around the state, local interest with radio stations throughout these different markets. And a tip of the hat, and you're focusing on local music and nobody's doing it. So great job.
Listen to Max Inc. Radio Saturday night, 6 to midnight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Muskego to Pewaukee, always streaming at waukradio.com. The Shaw 101 FM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at WAU.
And we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I gotta tell you, I love this. Missouri, come on, what are you doing? You're killing me out here. Evidently, the House in Missouri has given initial approval to the to their 45.6% $45.6 billion state budget. And you know what that state budget's doing? Going to defund public libraries. Going to defund libraries. Because who needs to read in Missouri? Who needs that? And you got to go, really? We're going to defund libraries? You know, because they're too woke, evidently. Evidently too woke. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on, well, just how bad the economy is, because I'm told it's horrible. I'm told it's crashing any day. We're going to all be on street corners with tin cups selling pencils. That's why I've asked my good friend Morris Pearl to come talk with us. Morris is the chairman of the Patriotic Millionaires. PatrioticMillionaires.org is their website. Morris, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks, Rick. You know, there's a reason why people are opening new businesses in San Francisco and in the Flatiron District here in New York, and not so much in Missouri.
Excellent point. And this is one of these things where, you know, all I'm getting from people is that the banks are going to collapse again. We're going to be right back in 2008, 2009. You know, you're somebody who follows this. How bad, how good, where are we? What are you looking at?
You know, I was just looking at today. Money is still trickling. But it's not trickling down, it's trickling up. Just today, a piece ran about how Dollar General, you know, where things are worth a dollar or $5 or something, is being fined in like four different states all over the place because they update the prices in their cash registers and they raise them, but they don't change the signs and the price tags on the stuff. So somebody goes and picks up a bunch of diapers that's labeled $9, and they're charged $10.75 when they check out, and they think that nobody's going to notice a dollar here and a dollar there. And sometimes they're right.
Yeah.
You know, who's going to know if you're buying $60 worth of stuff and it should have been $57? You know, because everything's off by 50 cents here and 75 cents there.
No, I mean, the Dollar General gets away with that stuff, as well as, you know, all of the labor abuses that we've seen over the years, having one person in a store and, you know, the wage theft claims and all kinds of stuff, because it really is. It's all about the buck. But that frame that you started with, that trickle up, you know, we hear a lot about supposed trickle down. It hasn't trickled down to me. I'm sorry. I was told it was going to be rivers of gold and honey. If we gave guys like you everything, that something would fall out of your pocket. That doesn't seem to be happening. It seems to be going, as you pointed out, the other way, upward.
You know, money trickles up. I invest in stock. So I own pieces of companies like Verizon, like Apple. And every month, millions of people with iPhones pay their phone bills. And a little bit of that money makes my stock go up. and I just sit here and mind my own business, and I see the numbers on my screen going up because the Verizon is worth a little more money than it was last month. Apple's worth a little more money than it was last month. And as long as people keep paying their bills every month, people like me who don't have to work for a living are going to get richer and richer and richer. The money trickles up in little tiny bits that nobody ever notices, except when you own, you know, you're an investor, you own a bunch of stock and things, and then you can notice.
No, it's interesting. I don't know if you saw the Bernie Sanders hearing this week, the HELP committee hearing, where Howard Schultz came in to testify. And it was very interesting to watch Republicans, you know, defend Howard Schultz and vehemently defend him. I mean, you know, my friend Dave Jamieson wrote a piece that, you know, Howard Schultz went to Washington and the only friends he could find were Republicans, because, you know, this idea that, you know, he built, you know, Starbucks and that he should be able to, you know, have all the spoils and all this stuff. Are we in a place where we're so polarized that there's no discussion on the responsibility of someone like Howard Schultz or Starbucks? I'm curious your thought.
I mean, I don't understand why it is that the people who claim they represent the regular working people are actually on the side of the billionaire deserves all the spoils. And yeah, Howard Schultz is a great guy.
It's a great story.
I don't know if I don't mean personally, but I mean, he's built a very good business. He did a great job. He owns part of a very valuable company. He deserves to be very rich. Good for him.
Agreed.
But he also follow the rules. If people organize a union, that's what they're allowed to do in this country. He's not supposed to go around intimidating people. If people, he's supposed to be bargaining with the union representatives and making some deal the same way that he owns, you know, almost 20,000 stores, and you don't get to go to each one of them individually and ask for a job. Well, a union can represent thousands of people who don't have to individually each try to make a deal with the management. And that's, it works the same way. You can have one management who represents, you know, this whole chain of stores, and a union representative who represents these thousands of workers. And they can get together and they can figure out what kind of deal they can make for both all these stores and all these workers.
Yeah. See, I've always advocated for, you know, this is an excellent opportunity for companies to engage with their workers instead of it having to be adversarial. So as I watch that hearing, I'm going, why does it have to be this adversarial? There's an opportunity to make workers more part of your business and to streamline that discussion process instead of always having to butt heads and spend the millions of dollars that they're spending on trying to bust these unions. I think it would be better spent on encouraging workers, you know, to stay, to get better skills, to do all kinds of things. It just seems, you know, this fighting is just counterproductive and frustrating.
I agree with you. I even talked to some of the union organizers. Why do the smart, articulate, intelligent people like you want to work in a place like this in the first place? And some of them love being baristas.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know why. I've never tried it. I don't even like coffee. I'm not planning to work there. But some people do like to work there. Thankfully, and maybe my wife drinks plenty of coffee for both of us. But I'm glad there are baristas. But I don't... Like you're right that the company would be better off. I think it's just they have a philosophical thing where he feels that it's just not right that somebody criticizes him.
Yeah. It's that benevolent dictator mentality.
That's what he wants to be. He wants to be thought of as this father figure over everybody. You know, the same way if you bring your 3-year-old to the someplace, you know, you expect them to follow you and do what you tell them to do and hold your hand when you're crossing the street and stuff like that. And, you know, if your 3-year-old started rebelling, well, you wouldn't like that. And he feels like he wants to treat his workers like they're his children.
Yeah.
And that just isn't right. Maybe a generation or two ago, they'd accept that. But they're not accepting that now. Times have changed. You know, I even feel weird. I go into my building It's where the doormen are part of Union Local 32BJ, SEIU. And it seems weird. They call me Mr. Pearl, but their name tags only have their first names. I don't even know what their last names are. You know, and like, those times have changed.
Yeah. Do they all have the same first name? If you know anything about the Pullman strike, all of the Pullman car porters were all named George.
Oh.
After George Pullman. Though obviously they all had different names. I just always find that interesting. Yeah. But the reason I bring this up is, you know, Starbucks, as you said, a very wild, profitable company. You know, before Schultz came back, was going to do the whole stock buyback thing. He understood the messaging and stopped it. But I look at these other places like Chipotle. You know, they're wildly profitable, and it's not trickling down to the workforce. In fact, they're actually bragging about how profitable they are.
They are raising prices far more than the price of that. Than either the price of the food is going up, or the cost of the labor is going up. The workmen they're paying the workers, their profit margins are increasing. I was just listening to the guy from GameStop or Wingstop earlier. And I mean, it was something he recorded before that, but he was talking about how the wings price of chicken went up a lot during the pandemic because there was a shortage of workers.
Yep.
Raised prices a lot. Now the price of chicken has dropped precipitously because there's plenty of workers now, apparently, in the chicken places. But they've not lowered the prices again. Their profit margins are huge now. In terms of the percentage of the money that they make that goes to the profit for the owners is much higher than it used to be. And that's fine if people pay more for wings. And, you know, who knows when you're getting, you know, a bunch of wings for your family, whether it's $18 or $19 or $17, I don't know. Maybe nobody's paying attention, but they're making hugely more money because the amount they were able to raise prices during the recession, during the pandemic, their prices are still high and they don't need to lower prices anymore. Because the price of chicken's actually gone down a lot.
Now, do you see those prices ever coming back down? Because, you know, I've had these conversations with friends that, you know, these prices are, you know, like, as you pointed out, the Wingstop or other wing places, you know, costs are just, you know, astronomical. Do you see them coming down or do wages have to catch up? I seem to believe, you know, and it's been 100 years since I took an economics course, but, you know, price stickiness is almost permanent. I don't see the prices coming down unless something tragic happens, like a major recession or something worse. I'm curious your thoughts.
Yeah, you basically never see prices going down for things. And yeah, maybe there'll be more wing stores and somebody will, you know, feel they're not getting enough customers, they'll put their wings on sale and say they'd rather have lower prices and less profit than nothing. And so it could be that competition will bring prices down. Prices do go down of some things, you know. Computers cost a lot less than they used to years ago. But no, I think it'll happen when people have a wing store, a wing restaurant, and they don't have enough customers coming in. Then they might advertise, oh, lower prices here, but not until that. And people are willing to pay because people are looking more for raises for their jobs than they are to try to save money that once a month when they go out for, you know, an expensive dinner or something.
Now, I want to ask you about the Silicon Valley Bank and you know, the stuff going on with the banking industry, because a lot of people are still really concerned. I've got listeners who email me all the time and go, you know, are we looking for the next crash? And I know the president said that, you know, when Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank collapsed, that they acted quickly to stabilize the banking system, but we haven't done enough oversight. Are we okay banking wise? And, you know, should we be pushing for more regulation?
I think yes to both. I think, yes, I believe we're okay now. I believe Silicon Valley Bank was really not unique, but really very unusual in terms of the way banks are run. They had very high overhead because they actually provided good customer service. So they had huge amounts of customer service people. And because they were signing up these 20-something and 30-something entrepreneurs who wanted credit cards and checking accounts and ATM cards and all this and that. And they were like giving pizza to people at like meetings of clubs and stuff like that. So they had high overhead, so they needed to make more money. So that's why they invested in mortgages that were fixed for 30 years and had higher interest rates than commercial loans that rolled over every 6 months or every year. And that's why they got screwed when mortgages, who they thought were giving to people who were going to roll over these homes every couple of years, ended up being so low interest that people aren't selling them at all anymore. So these mortgages are actually going to stick out there for 30 years. They're selling them for 80 or 90 cents on the dollar just because they're so much longer than they thought.
Yeah.
And, you know, they end up losing a lot of money. But I think, so the people that invested in the bank and ran the bank are, well, they're out. They're getting nothing. The people who deposited their money in the bank are getting their money back. And the other banks are being made to pay for that. And they should be happy to be, you know, the really big banks should be happy paying a few billion dollars to shore up the FDIC again to prevent this from happening again.
Good to hear on both fronts. Is anything being done that we know? I mean, are they?
I'm hoping we see more regulation. Well, I'm hoping we see stricter regulation. Maybe not more in a sense of like higher amounts of regulations, but I think we need regulators who take action. These regulators knew there was a problem last year in certainly by the summertime, maybe even before that. They knew there was a problem. They sent the head of the bank letters explaining that he was acting unacceptably. And then he didn't change course. And the regulators, if they had shut down the bank last year in July or August, or even told him he had, you know, a few weeks to fix it, where they were going to shut it down in August last year, it would have been a lot less painful than it was, you know, on a Friday night in the end of February.
Not a good point.
Yeah, so they should have taken action. I don't know whether they need new laws or they need political will. But I think the Republicans were saying, oh, they didn't do a great job on this, so we don't want to give them any more authority, are just wrong. You know, it's kind of like saying, oh, our fire department wasn't able to put out the fire as quickly as we wanted to, so we're going to lower their budget because they're doing a bad job. No, if your fire department isn't able to put out the fires quickly, you give them more money because you figure they need more firefighters and maybe more fire trucks or more of whatever they have, not less. So I think in this case, the fact that the bank had a problem means you need to send more people to watch over the bank and yell at them and make them fix the problem earlier, not fewer people.
I'm right there with you. Right there with you. Morris, I appreciate the time as always. Good information. I'm thrilled to know the economy is not falling. The sky is not falling. And I don't have to get out the tin cup to sell pencils tomorrow.
Nope, the sky is still there, and you're going to be back on tomorrow night.
There you go. Good stuff. Thanks so much, Morris. Appreciate the time.
Thank you, Rick.
Good stuff, Morris Pearl, chairman of the Patriotic Millionaires. PatrioticMillionaires.org, the website. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around and listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come the talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I'll jump into a couple of emails real quick. Got an email from Will, listening on KTNF up in Minneapolis. He says, there have been several train derailments the past several weeks that no one is talking about, all in rural areas. You talk about living in a rural area. Have you noticed that these derailments never happen in urban areas? It's as if they're trying to poison us rural conservatives. Can't take our guns or force us to do what they want, so they're going to kill us off with chemicals in our food and water. I got to tell you, interesting little twist there. You had me at no one's talking about it, and you know we should be doing more about it. And yeah, they do happen in rural areas because that's where the trains, you know, put the pedal to the metal, so to speak. But then there's that weird flip. They're trying to kill us. Deregulation across the board is about killing working people. In rural areas, in urban areas, it doesn't matter. Unprotected working people get the screws. Now, what he's talking about is up in Minnesota, there was another train derailment. In a small town, there this BNSF rail cars, there were several cars that spilled. Some of them had some chemicals on it, ethanol and some corn syrup and some horrible stuff that went on. Evidently, it burned. It's because it's highly flammable. Caught fire, was burning for a while. But that's not the only one that's happened. I mean, there have been numerous train derailments. I mean, just on what was it, on Sunday there was one, Canadian Pacific, near Widmere, North Carolina. I think we talked about, or North Dakota, we talked about this. 31 of the 70 cars derailed. You had some ugly stuff there that happened. I guess this ethylene glycol on some liquid asphalt that did some damage. Also, you know, 12 hours later, you had one out in, what is it, Baker, California, in the Mojave Desert, that the crew had to jump off the train because it was doing 80 miles an hour, and it was an uncontrolled train movement. I mean, we have these derailments. It's just now because of East Palestine, we're paying attention to it a little bit more. I don't think they're trying to kill us in rural areas. So if that was the main question, no, I do not believe that they are trying to kill us. So I hope that helps, Will. Got another email, no name. Rick, I heard you talk about Twitter, but did you mention anything about this, and why not? Evidently, Twitter has removed a bunch of tweets under the Trans Day of Vengeance. I'm not 100% sure what the point of this is. I guess some people are saying, you know, transgender people should take up arms and do, you know, things and all kinds of stuff. I don't know that these are actual people or these are bots or what. I think it's stupid, it's unproductive, and it shouldn't have happened. And I don't care that it's been taken off. How is that? Now, since you brought up Twitter to me, what we do know is that thanks to Twitter's algorithm and amplifying the For You section, which I just came across, thank you, Elon Musk, it's filled with nothing but hate speech. It is wall-to-wall crazy. Because, you know, the last couple of days I'm looking at my timeline and going, why am I seeing all of these tweets from people that I despise? The Denise D'Souzas of the world. Why am I seeing Bridget Gabrielle? Why am I seeing Trump Jr.? Why am I seeing all of this outlandish stuff? And it's because I think that's what Elon wants me to see. I have no control over the For You part. And I didn't even know I moved it over to For You. It just miraculously showed up. I wonder how that happened. Now, look, I'm fairly astute. I'm paying attention, and I'm talking to my producer. I'm going, have you had this? And he goes, oh, yeah, that's because of the For You part of it. Just move away back over to your followers' side, and you'll see the normal timeline. He goes, but, you know, the thing is the average person, you know, they're not paying attention to this. All they know is now all they're seeing is crazy. All they're seeing is hatred. All they're seeing is the right-wing MAGA blather. And this is the reason that Elon bought Twitter, was to turn it into a right-wing hate fest. I mean, he turned a $44 billion entity into $20 billion, and I'm telling you, it's going to get worse. Because while the people, you know, after April 1st, start buying onto Twitter Blue for $8 or $10 or $12 a month, that's only going to be short-lived. Because you're...
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Waukesha's only news talk station.
CBS News Special Report. A Manhattan grand jury indicts former President Trump.
This is a historic moment.
Because he's the first former president to be charged with a crime. The grand jury had been investigating the circumstances surrounding hush money payments. CBS's Robert Costa.
The former president called for protests. He had the expectation of an arrest, and he called for protests. So there's real unease. A lot of officers on edge in New York about what could happen when Trump comes in to be fingerprinted and ultimately arraigned.
Which sources say could be on Tuesday. CBS News legal contributor Jessica Levinson on the prospect that the former president's legal team was given advance notice that the indictment was coming.
Did they potentially give the former president an indication of what was in this indictment? I think the chances are higher here than in other cases because you are dealing with a historic first. You are dealing with the former president. And there is nothing that is conventional about this.
CBS News Special Report. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
News brought to you by Gingras Thompson & Wachs, your personal injury attorneys with over 35 years of experience. GTWLawyers.com. They're all in to win.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matt Mayer. Here's what you need to know. A proposed bill would give grant money to state gun stores to increase mental health awareness. The proposal by two state Republican lawmakers would help provide training to gun store staff to recognize a person in crisis. It also provides money to set up temporary gun storage programs at shops where people could voluntarily keep their firearms if they're in a mental health crisis. Gun store owners, though, say the bill would have to be very clear on how surrendered guns can be reobtained once the owner recover. Wisconsin's annual winter moratorium, which prevents utility customers from getting cut off from their service, ends on April 15th. The Public Service Commission of Wisconsin and the Department of Administration say that for people still struggling to keep the heat on, they should apply to the Wisconsin Home Energy Assistance Program that helps eligible households with their heating and electric bills. I'm Jane Matnair, and this is Civic Media News.
Don't you deserve a job you love? Civic Media is preserving hometown radio, broadcasting from main streets across Wisconsin, and we're hiring radio advertising sales professionals to join our rapidly growing network of local radio stations. If you have a connection to your community, prior sales experience, and want to earn an outstanding living where you and your hard work is appreciated, you should apply right now. Find more information on our website, civicmedia.us. Click on the Careers tab. Hey, Wisconsin, voting is one of our fundamental rights. Every eligible citizen has the right to be heard. You need an acceptable photo ID to vote in the spring election on April 4th. Vote Riders provides free help to get your Wisconsin ID card. Please visit voteriders.org today. They can answer all your questions about voter ID and offer free help if you need an ID to vote. If you're a citizen and you need an ID, visit voteriders.org. Voteriders.org.
Max Inc. Radio with Dennis Graham from Rockonson.
Appreciate all the support of Mad Radio 92.7. And by the way, a tip of the hat to Civic Media. That was a great article on the Cap Times by Paul Fanlon. You guys got a great model that you're growing around the state, local interest with radio stations throughout these different markets. And a tip of the hat, and you're focusing on local music and nobody's doing it. So great job.
Listen to Max Inc. Radio Saturday night, 6 to midnight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Women get a lot of advice about self-care these days, but one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Ron DeSantis cheered and voted for it, and the CEO of Silicon Valley Bank led the lobbying campaign to ram it into law. This is Jim Hightower saying, these politicos and profiteers crashed the bank, and now they're trying to put us to sleep with their hokey anti-woke PR stunt.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So we've been seeing a lot of union activity. Talking with our patriotic millionaire in the last segment about, union organizing and You know, this idea of the benevolent dictator. We're seeing some of that over at UPS, one of the most iconic companies in the country. You know, you think about, you know, the people coming to your door and got us through the pandemic. Their contract's coming up here over the summer. And it's, from what I hear, it's been an interesting negotiation because, look, these are folks who they came to work. They showed up. They did the hard work. They put their lives on the line. They were the essential frontline heroes, if you remember. If your mind can go back that far, that's who they were. And now they're saying, look, this is a wildly profitable company. Our labor did this. We want some of it. And here to share some thoughts on how negotiations are going and maybe where things were going to go and possibly is there going to be a strike over the summer. I've asked my good friend Richard Hooker to come share some thoughts with us. He's the Secretary of Treasurer at Teamsters Local 623. Their website, teamsterslocal623.org. Richard, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you for having me, brother.
So where are we at right now? Look, your members through the pandemic were the reason that the vast majority of us got through it. If those boxes weren't on the porch that got us the games and the supplies and the everything that we needed, we don't get through this. So your members, truly patriotic, frontline, essential, heroes, throw some more words in that because that's who they were.
Absolutely. And these negotiations, our members are looking to collect on all those adjectives that we were described as essential, heroes, most important, you know, frontline workers, you know, all these things. And now we want to be compensated for all the stuff that you just say. You know, we saved America, you know, and we want to be compensated for that.
Now, what do you say to the person who goes, Richard, you know, well, UPS drivers, they make a really good living. They make over $100,000 a year. That's enough.
Well, listen, the company made $318 billion over the life of this contract. Is that enough? How did they get it? They got it off of those drivers, off of those sorters, off of those part-timers, off of the full-timers. So, you know, if it was not for those workers, none of these things happen. So, you know, we earned that money. And not everybody makes $100,000 at UPS. And that's a very key component. They like to throw that number out there, but the vast majority of the workforce are part-time workers. And part-time workers don't make $100,000 a year.
How much did they make over the life of the contract again? What was that? What was that number?
$318 billion would it be.
$318 billion. That's profit.
Profit.
Well, so how can you not go, we're going to share some of that? Now, again, you know, this is one of you made an important point that there are some people who, you know, who do really well, but the folks, the part-timers, the people who load and unload the trucks, maybe not as well. One of the worst things that I've seen happen to our heroes, UPS pulled this stunt. And maybe you can shed some light on it. Here locally, to get people to come to work during the pandemic, they raised their wages from, I think it was like $14 an hour up to $24 an hour. And then just on an arbitrary day, they unilaterally just ripped it away. Am I getting that right?
1,000% correct. Here in the Philadelphia area, they're one of their major air hubs, the Philadelphia Airport, which is the largest on the East Coast, the second largest in the country, they maintain that MRA, which is called the market rate adjustment, to keep up with, you know, keeping the people in there because they can't keep people in at $14 and $15, especially when you have other companies paying more like Amazon, you know. And so they you know, kept that wage up. But in our city building, the Philadelphia building, the Oregon Avenue building, they took that away. And what we had to do, like you said, they didn't tell them. So we had to go to the city because in Pennsylvania, as you know, it is against the law, Pennsylvania law, to take a person's wages without letting them know. So we were able to get over $30,000 for those workers in that building because they pulled that stunt. But to go back to the other side of that point is, if you can afford to bump up those wages because they're essential, then you should be able to do that all of the time. Not when you just, oh, you know what, let's do this. No, we're at the table. You know you can afford it. $318 billion. Now you got to make it right.
Some of the other things that folks have told me, because we've got a lot of listeners who are UPS members, or UPS workers and Teamster members, and I get email from them all the time, you know, saying, you know, this is, you know, the wages are one thing. And look, you know, everyone wants to do a little bit better. They want to put more money in their pocket. They want to do better with health care, even though you've got pretty good health care. They want to do better with pensions. One of the big things that always comes up is surveillance and treatment by management that has, from what I'm told, has gotten horrible. Now, you obviously represent a lot of UPS members. How bad is it? I mean, I used to say that whenever you would walk by, past a UPS truck and you'd hear that clicking sound, that was the company, you know, counting how long that driver's butt was out of the seat, because that's how they've micromanaged it. Has it gotten worse than that?
Absolutely. Listen, UPS is a brutal, retaliatory, discriminatory company. They make a, I hate to say this, maybe I don't hate to say this, they make a lot of members very, very uneasy because of these surveillance, and they manage in fear and not in just good management. You know, they micromanage the drivers. You know, like you said, they time them how long it takes to get to this stop and all this stuff, right? And it's not fair. And you have cameras in your truck just watching you and surveilling you all day long to see if you make a mistake so they can fire you. This is one of the only companies I know that will spend 30 days to train you and then the next 30 years trying to fire you.
No, I have heard that. And it's, you know, it's that constant, it's that constantly under the gun, that constant surveillance. And one of the things that I've had people come to me with is saying, there's a lot of mental health issues among drivers who are struggling with the stress that's brought on by this. And everyone says, you know, the union's got to do something on this front. So I've got to imagine that this is a sticking point at the bargaining table. And it's something that you guys are pushing for. Am I getting that right?
Absolutely. Listen, the quality of life of our members is very, very important, because if you have particularly a driver, they're constantly under the gun, they have 340 some odd methods they have to follow, and, you know, the company is looking for you to miss a method so they can take your livelihood away from you and your family. And they don't care anything about that, right? They look forward to hurting you and not helping you and just ruining your life with whatever they can do. And so the union is doing what we need to do as far as negotiations to stop all of that, because in this last contract of 2018, there was actually language put in the contract to make the harassment, stiffer, but it's still not enough. So we gotta add more language to that, because the company, man, they just do whatever they want to do when it comes to harassment, retaliation, and things like that. And yeah. And it needs to stop.
No, and I listened to that. And I've had conversations with drivers and people who work for UPS. This is one of the central main issues that keeps coming up. And, you know, whenever someone, you know, says, you know, why you need a union, this is one of the main reasons. Because think about how bad it is right now. And then imagine with no one to stand up for you in a moment when the surveillance state comes for you.
Absolutely. And you hit it on the head. If we didn't have a union, the company would really just run roughshod on our members. The only thing that's stopping them from doing that is the union, is the contract, is the language, right? And we just have to tighten the language up, make it stronger, because UPS has become more and more brutal over the years. See, like, the more money they make, the more brutal they become.
Yeah, the more they squeeze the quarter, the more the eagle screams. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show, where Richard Hooker, Richard's the Secretary Treasurer with Teamsters Local 623 in Philadelphia, teamsterslocal623.org, the website. If you want to take a look at what they do, they are in the middle of the UPS contract negotiations, which I guess, you know, what, the end of July, is that when we're looking?
Yeah, the contract expires August 1st, so we're just looking. You know, we're getting ready. We're preparing for a strike. You know, no one wants to.
Yeah.
But we have to be prepared. And right now, the way negotiations are going, very, very slow. I think the company is so arrogant and cocky. And I think because when you make so much money, you believe that you're untouchable. But this company needs to realize that everything that they have is based on the backs of our workers. There's nothing that they produce or make or manufacture that they do on their own. Everything that they have is off the backs off of their workers.
And again, it comes back to this treatment. I've been talking about some of the things, the complaints that I get from people, conditions. People join unions for reasons, wages, hours, conditions. Usually in this day, it's conditions being a big part of it. And we talked about the surveillance state, but, overtime is a huge issue still, I understand, because they're working people, inordinate amount of hours. And also the heat. In this day and age, when we think air conditioning is everywhere, your package drivers still, correct me if I'm wrong, still don't have heat in the truck or have air conditioning in the truck. On 100 degree days, there's no forgiveness there.
No heat in the package cars, no heat in the warehouses. The management has air conditioning in their offices, right? But the workers don't, and warehouses are extremely hot. Package cars are extremely hot. We had a brother out on the West Coast. He passed away from the heat, and it got national attention. And I think everybody saw the Ring doorbell camera that caught another member. I believe this brother was in Arizona, passed out because of the heat. And when you listen to the CEO, when she did her call to the stockholders, she realizes that, she even said that the earth is getting hotter and this, that, and the other. But what are you going to do about it? How are you going to protect your workers? If you know this is an issue, how are you going to protect them? How?
Paper fans, of course. We'll give you one of those open up paper fans. You can fan yourself whenever you want.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, listen, August 1st will be here. And depending on what they do, this is all on them, whether we strike or not. If they feel like that they can do it and we're not going to strike or whatever the case may be, they're going to find out the hard way. Because when you talk to our members, they are ready. They are ready to go right now.
I get contacts from, in fact, I think even if they get everything they want, there are people who still, just because they are so angry that it's almost like they need it, to claw back some of their power. And, we'll see. I'm hoping that not, because, I've been on strike in my lifetime. And there's nothing good about it. And, from a working person's perspective, that you've got to defend what you have and fight for what you're looking for in the future. But what are you telling your members? I've had some old timers give me advice in the past on how to prepare for a potential strike. What are you telling members?
So actually, we started doing this strike preparation 2 years ago, because we have a lot of part-timers, a lot of younger members who this is their first union job. So education and engagement was very, very important to us. We didn't want to wait until the last moment to start talking about this. We actually had our credit union come out to a few of our union members to talk about, to talk about setting up accounts for saving money in preparation for a strike. We had a savings plan where you put $20, $25, $30, $35 each week, and after 2 or 3 years, this is how much money you would have. So just in case if something were to happen, a work stoppage, you'll be covered financially.
Yeah.
And we talked about that. We talked about the benefits and things like that. Just to get our members ready to go if it was necessary. Because I think the most important part is just the education piece of a strike. This is not something that you want to do, but if you have to, you need to be educated on what the pros and the cons are of a strike. And like you said, to your point, at this point, our members, they want to go out because of the disrespect, because of the harassment, because of retaliation, because of the pandemic. We were forced to work in these conditions and there was no respect or dignity. It just the profits went up, but the respect and the dignity went down.
Yeah,
they haven't forgotten that.
Like you said, they wanted more, so they're cracking the whip to get people to do more with less and make more profit. Last line of questioning I've got for you. You know, you're obviously at the negotiating table, and I know you can't say the back and forth, but you've done this before. You know, what's the tone? Are you optimistic that things are going to go a positive way, or how what's your gut telling you?
My gut is telling me that August 1st, we're going to be on strike. That's what my gut is telling me. Not unless something really happens here in the next couple of months. But right now, as of today, I would tell our members, be ready to go August 1st.
And hopefully you've been saving. As an old-timer told me, you make sure you've always got 6 months of bills in a coffee can and a sock and a bank account, because at any minute you might have to cross that threshold to defend the job that you have and the wages and the benefits and the conditions you've fought for generations. And we're apparently on the precipice of that as well. I wish you the best. I hope you'll come back and share some more as this continues and as it heats up. I appreciate the time, Richard.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Richard Hooker, he is the Secretary Treasurer there at Teamsters Local 623. Make sure you check out their website, teamsterslocal623.org. Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Have the fun. Think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. The most important word in the language of the working class is solidarity. Those inspiring words were spoken by labor leader Harry Bridges, who died on this day in labor history. The year was 1990. Harry was born into a middle-class family in Melbourne, Australia. At the age of 14, his father put him to work collecting rents in Melbourne slums, an experience that gave young Harry a heart for struggling people. At 16, he joined the Merchant Marines, landing in the United States just 3 years later. At the San Francisco docks, he joined the International Longshore Association, which was organizing against the company union. On May 9, 1934, Harry helped lead a strike of the West Coast docks. Furious shipping company owners and politicians retaliated violently on what became known as Bloody Thursday. Police beat, shot, and wounded longshoremen up and down the coast. Employers offered Bridges a $50,000 bribe to win his support, but he refused. The union's leadership brokered a deal to end the strike, but the dock workers roundly rejected it. Instead of settling, Bridges contacted other unions at port cities and convinced them to support a general strike. The general strike lasted 4 days and won the longshoremen an agreement that included shorter hours, increased pay, and safer working conditions. 3 years later, Bridges split from the International Longshore Association and helped found the International Longshore Workers Union, affiliated under the CIO. Harry became the West Coast director for the CIO. Throughout his life, Harry advocated for democratic unionism, including open mics at meetings, direct elections of union leaders by rank-and-file membership, and member referendums on contract proposals. The U.S. government continually harassed Bridges, accusing him of communist sympathies. Despite this harassment, the ILWU became one of the leading voices of the U.S. labor movement. Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. Back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. I got to tell you, I'm hoping that the UPS workers don't go on strike. I'm hoping they get the contract that they earned. I'm hoping that all of that rhetoric around being, you know, frontline heroes, essential, that patriotic stuff, you remember. I'm hoping that is rewarded. Because as Richard pointed out, and it's mind-blowing, over the life of the contract, $318 billion in profit. This is a company that bought back massive amounts, billions of dollars in stock buybacks. which should have been wages. You know, in the old days, you go back to the pre-greed is good, and they were buying stock back. They were investing in their workers. They were investing in new equipment. They were putting air conditioning in trucks. It's mind-blowing to me that these package trucks don't have air conditioning in them. And that, you know, they're sweating their you-know-whats off all summer long. And the heating systems are terrible, and the conditions are terrible. So when you go, well, they make a lot of money, yeah, they earn every penny of it. They're running constantly, 10, 12 hours a day. We didn't even get to talk about that. Now I'm hoping, again, these contracts are about respect. I'm hoping that the issues that the workers bring to the table are respected. Because look, the company's going to come and say, we want more. We want more. $318 billion over the life of the last contract. It's not enough. We want $319 billion. We want more. We're going to squeeze the quarter till the eagle screams. And this is where, you know, I look at the Howard Schultz's testimony in front of the HELP committee. You have this benevolent dictator who, you know, seems offended by the fact that his workers aren't just, you know, bowing at his feet and kissing the ring, that they've done some things that are not bad. And that the workers are saying, no, our labor creates all this stuff. We're the face of your company. We're the people that are here to be seen and to sell your product. We should be treated better. And that's every working person. And what's happened over the years, and this is what's frustrating to me, you hear the frame from the right. It's always, you know, these union workers are all lazy. And I defy half of these people to go work a day at UPS. Or a day in some of these conditions that Teamster members work in, or union members work in, the steel workers and the heat in the steel mills. I defy you to try it. It's always easy to throw, you know, oh, they're all lazy. They're overcoddled. No, these are people who work for a living. And just because they demand to be respected with decent wages, hours, and conditions doesn't make them bad. In fact, I keep wondering why more of us don't. Why more working people don't value their time and their effort and their livelihoods more. Why they don't want to take control of their situation and say, you know what? I do deserve better. I do earn better wages, hours, conditions. And I should get that. Not only should I get it, I demand it. This is the weirdest part of the moment that we're in. And the fact that the younger generation gets it is encouraging to me. This idea that, you know, we've watched our parents be, you know, basically just run through the ringer and be cheated out of their pensions and their healthcare costs go completely out of control. You know, I talked to, when we did our Working Class Heroes Tour, we had the opportunity to go to, you know, a number of different rural communities and talk to, you know, rural working people, you know, like me. And the concerns were all the same. Wages, hours, conditions, just not in those terms. You know, all the healthcare costs are so expensive. My co-pays are outrageous. You know who you don't hear that from as often? Union members. Because they negotiate for better wages, for better benefits, for better health care. I tell the story all the time. I got my hip replaced a couple years ago and cost me $120 out of pocket. And that's because of my union insurance. I can easily say I got that, hooray for me, and the heck with you. My mindset is everyone should have that. You know, when my son had his appendix burst, there was not a second where I worried about, are we going to go broke? Is this what's going to put our family in financial trouble? Are we going to have to eat, you know, store brand mac and cheese? No, I thought about, how do I get my kid the best care he can get? How do I make sure that he's going to be okay? And I want that for everyone. And this is where I keep coming back to. I want every working person to be as empowered, as engaged, and as demanding as my union brothers and sisters. because the wealth that these companies put in their pocket, those workers create it. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Disagreements go to the top of the page. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you download the podcast wherever you get your favorite podcasts. You'll find ours. I appreciate you tuning in. Thanks so much for being here.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.